We're going to open the morning with a bit of Inyanei Rosh Hashanah. The first major topic that appears in Shulchan Aruch is the first topic that hits us chronologically. And that, of course, is what we're in the midst of now, the Amiras HaSlichas. Amiras HaSlichas, the tour opens Hilchos Rosh Hashanah with a Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, a very fundamental Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar is an ancient medrash, which is of the opinion that Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai in a tuba three times. It's hard to figure out how to piece together all the different records in the Pesukim. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar understands that the way to piece it together, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai three times. He goes up on Shavuos, comes down as Mishnah points, end of Tanis points out, comes down on Ashiva Asur B'Tamuz, which should have been a day of intense Kabbalah Satorah. And instead it's transformed to the day of Eibel because that's the day of Shavuos Haluchas. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says he goes up the next day for a second time, comes down the end of Chodesh Av, and the third round of 40 days, he goes up Rosh Chodesh Elul, and comes down on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur comes down with the second set of Luchas. Yom Kippur is our Yom Kippur commemorates and reaches back to the Koach and the spiritual segula of the first ever communal kapara, the first ever kapara of a tzibur. The first din, and to an extent, tshuva and kapara b'yachid, is Rosh Hashanah. And we'll talk about that going forward. Adam Arish's chet is on Rosh Hashanah. His nivra Rosh Hashanah, his chet is on Rosh Hashanah, the din is on Rosh Hashanah, and his reached out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, perhaps already on Rosh Hashanah. But the first kapara of the tzibur is expressed and made palpable on Yom Kippur, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with the second set of luchas. So I can see a very visible expression, manifestation of the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu was giving them a second chance. And that's why Yom Kippur in particular, and the whole period of El and El Eseres Mei Tshuva together, are a time of, they're particularly propitious for Tshuva and Kapara. Sefer HaKuzri writes that in Mamar Aleph, he's talking about the specialness of Eretz, the spiritual specialness of Eretz Yisrael. So Yehuda Levi writes that just as there are different parts of the globe have different physical climates, and the climate will determine which flora and fauna are present and thrive, and polar bears don't roam New York or New Jersey, or Connecticut, or Pennsylvania. And palm trees don't thrive here either. And meanwhile, there are no alligators at the North Pole. Every climate lends itself to certain flora and fauna, to certain plant and animal life. Sefer Kuzri writes that that's not only true physically, true spiritually also. The different places in the world have different spiritual climates that lend themselves to different sorts of spiritual growth or different sorts of spiritual challenge. He goes on to talk about the unique spiritual power of Eretz Yisrael. Now, what he's said about different, what the Sefer HaKuzri said spatially about different places is also true temporally. The different times of the year have different, so to speak, spiritual climates and lend themselves more easily, different times of the year will lend themselves more easily to particular types of spiritual growth or spiritual ambition. And it's when we talk about what's the avoda of a Yom Tov, this time, this man is mesugel for a certain type of achievement, that's what it means. That the spiritual climate of that period of time, of year, is such that it lends itself more easily to certain types of achievement, to certain types of growth, sometimes to certain types of challenges. Are come to the fore more because that's what this Zman is mesugel for. That's an idea that some Sfarim derive from the language of the Gemara in the second parak of Shabbos. The Gemara talks about, quotes the Brice and Chafal from the Beis, about the story of my Chanukah. At the end, the Brice says, L'shon HaCheres, and it sounds like the next year, Kaval Masom Yom Tov Baal Vodah. They established these 8 days, Yom Tov with Hal Vodah. Well, we better talk about that Brice at greater length after the Chanukah time. But one of the comments that some Sfarim make, what's with L'shon HaCheres? Why do they need the perspective? Why they need to stand at a distance for a year later, or perhaps several years later, and they say, oh, now they see this should be yomtiv. A couple of ways to look at it, but one suggestion is that they wanted to see whether there was something permanently special about this season of the year. It just happened to be Bonshalom. The Chaz of the Tuvo gave us that Yeshua, not just happened, but is there something permanently different now about that time of the year that's worthy of making Yom Tov? When they were able to take the pulse of the 8 days of the beginning of Chaf Kislev in a different year, so wow, there's really something, this Zman is Masuga for something special, that's why it was worthy of a permanent Yom Tov. And that truth is what the Gemara Yevamos in Rosh Hashanah says about the week and a half that begin later this week. Gemara comments at the end of the first paragraph of Rosh Hashanah that Yeshayahu Anavi runs a stira between Yeshayahu Anavi, one of the most popular psukim in all of Yeshayahu, and a pasuk in Chumash Dvar. One of the most lamed passage in Yeshayahu, the Haftar of Tanas Tzibor, the opening line. So the Gemara points out, you know what that pasuk just said? You should ought to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he's findable, when he's more accessible. Kira'u b'yosal karav. So call out to him when he's closer. The Gemara says it sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not always equally close. This goes back to someone asked Thursday night about the sliding scale of Ashkach HaPratis. And this is one of the dimensions, is that there are certain times of the year HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more accessible. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more open to our tefillos. The Gemara says, but in Chumash Devarim, Baruch Hashem tells us, Hashem Elokeinu b'chol kareinu v'elav, Baruch Hashem is close to us whenever we call out to him. B'chol kareinu v'elav. So which one is it? Does it vary? Does it not vary? So the Gemara says, well, it depends. It depends whether it's a tefillas hayachid or tefillas hatzibur. The tzibur is b'chol kareinu v'elav. Tzibur always has access. The office is always open. Versus tefillas hayachid, not always open. Tefillas hayachid, Kadosh Baruch Hu is particularly available during Aser Simichuva. And what they had a chance to talk Thursday night after Mishra, back in New Jersey, about what that means, and the Tosas in the two blood earlier, and Tazayin works that through. What does that mean in terms of our private davening all year long? You know, Tom and other by Tosas dispute, does that mean there always has to be a tzibur aspect to your davening? Either you're actually davening through the tzibur, or you're davening on behalf of the tzibur. And if it's a private need, maybe you need to, there has to be a broadening of the contents of the Sokh Shar Chol Yisrael. Because if I'm davening for him, it can't just be for him, it has to be for him in the context of, I care about this person in particular, but I care about everyone. And maybe even my caring about this particular chola can sensitize me to the fact that there are other cholim out there that I don't even know. But there has to be a tzibur element. Maybe our time is a different approach. Our time is always a different question. But that Gemara takes us in many directions, but one of them is that Aseres Mitzvah is different. They're different, with another, a very clear example, this notion of it's a Zman Mesuga. Aseres Mitzvah is a time when Tefillah will be more impactful than the rest of the year. So that's a time that Pirkei Avot says as well. That in terms of Tshuva and Kapara, so this whole 39, 40-day period, we always have a 29-day Elul, so versus the 39-day period, Vela Aseres Mitzvah, the time that's particularly propitious for Kapara. Yeah. Which? About the Dirsha and Ibim Matsokrov Yitzhakarov. That's in Yevamos, I think in the 12th parak, and it's in Rosh Hashanah Dafir Chesamanov, near the Baum Dafir Chesamanov. So the opening siman in the tour, it begins with Pirkei Avot, There was this third set of 40 days, the third Moshe Rabbeinu's third round on Har Sinai is this period of time, and that's why this period of time is special. And that's why already El is El. And Ashkenazim mark it with the Shofar. And Sfaradim mark it with Slichos. Then the question is, okay, Ashkenazim don't mark it with Slichos. Fine, the same. But we do say Slichos starting this week. And the question becomes, what's with this week? If you tell me you can say Slichos, there were communities that said Slichos during Aseres Mitzvah. So, that I understand well. That's a time, particularly propitious time of tefillah. If you have the minhag of Sephardi communities, they say Slichos throughout El, I understand that also. That corresponds to this period of Lev. But the standard Ashkenazi minhag was starting so the Sunday before, but a minimum of 4 days, that seems like it's sort of like a nishtahi nishtaher. I had a chance to discuss with some of you, but so Shabbos a little bit, at least three different approaches. And a monk lines them up, they're already pure and classical sources. What's with the Ashkenazi minhag? Is it? Is it that it's compensating for Aseres Mitzvah? Because there had been a minhag of tzaddik and chassidim anshei maisa. It's not for us. It was unusual tzaddikim at Amidus Chassidus, they would fast, not at night, but every day of Aseres Mitzvah. Let me just be clear. Do not take on this practice. Maybe when you'll be great tzaddik in many decades from now. Right now, this is not recommended. But this is a Jews have on a very high madrega. We should all be zeicha one day to be on such a high bali madrega. The Jews on an unusual madrega is there was this minute to fast not just Yom Kippur and some gedalia, but every day of Aseres Mitzvah. Problem is that you're not allowed to fast on every Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to fast on Shabbos. Right? And there are 7 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and Erev Yom Kippur is never Shabbos, the way the calendar is arranged. So Erev Yom Kippur and Shabbos Shuvah are two different days. They already knocked out 2 days. And his machlok is over 1,000 years old. Machlokas Hagaonim, is it appropriate or forbidden to fast on Rosh Hashanah? And we assume, based on Pesukim Ezra Nehemiah, that it's not only not a great idea, it's actually an Easter. Like any other Yom Tif, with the exception of Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah is not allowed to fast. If Yom Kippur will talk about it, really should be a suit as a we ought to be eating the suit of Yom Kippur too. That's what some Vinyon explains. Maybe that's why we eat an Erev Yom Kippur. Be that as it may, you can't fast 2 days Rosh Hashanah, you can't fast Shabbat Shuvah, you can't fast Erev Yom Kippur. So you're missing 4 out of the 10 days. So they used to fast, these Chassidim Anshei Maisa used to fast for the 4 days that precede Rosh Hashanah. Chafav, Chafzayim, Chafches, Chaftes, El. So the fast in Erev Rosh Hashanah, at least in the morning, till Chatzot, that's a far more common minhag. So the slichas, maybe even we're not fasting, but that's what the slichas is based on. So the first approach is assuming that the slichas, that this period of time, that this week or so, half a week, week and a half, is meant to be sort of like a tashlumin for Aseres Mitzvah. Then or the idea we spoke before, the Dior Shishan Bimas, almost like sort of like a Tosefa Shabbos. Like Tosefa Aseres Mitzvah. Aseres Mitzvah early. Chassidim Anshei Maisa in terms of they're fasting. We aren't fasting, but us in terms of our added taking advantage of the sale. Next week and a half is a sale on davening, a 10-day sale. All your davening counts more. So we start that early. If you're a club member, the sale starts early for you. Ki'ilu, right? As we're saying. The Tashlumin, so this is the period of Tashlumin, Aseres Mitzvah is the period of Tosef, Aseres Mitzvah. So we're ready, we're not going to fast, at least we chaperai the extra dam. Yeah, question.
How does the fasting work with 4 days before the first day of Shabbos?
How does it work 4 days before the first day? I imagine that they would back up. I assume so. That's one approach. Yeah, is it? That is a great question. That's a great question, which for this approach is not 100% clear. The Vilna Gaon has an idea, which we'll get to very soon.
What was the question?
Why Sunday? Why are we starting Sunday? Why don't we just start on Chavah? Which is striking. It's one of the only times that we have a minig that's tied to a particular it should have been a date that's set time to the daily. A second approach is that the 4 days may correspond not to the 4 days of Aseres Menshu that we're making up in advance, but the 4 days of a Bikur HaKarban. If you're bringing a Karban Tamid, you have a Beis HaMikdash every day, you're bringing two sheep as Karban as Tamid, one in the morning, one in the evening, or in the afternoon, and those are the brackets within which all the other Karbanos are brought. So the din is that the Karban Tamid is Ta'un Bikur Dalad Yam. You're checking, that's why you have the Lishkas HaKaloyim. And off the Ezra's Nashim, they needed to, the sheep needed 4 days of examination prior to being brought. That's what some developed the idea, 4 days of examination of our examination of ourselves prior to approaching Rosh Hashanah on Rosh Hashanah. And then the third approach, so the first approach really speaks to the tshuva. To the Kol HaTefillah. The second, and then sort of the Tashuah, plugging in, getting access to Aseres Menshu, early access to the Kol HaAseres Menshu. The second approach, it speaks to the Hachana for Rosh Hashanah, and Hachana for Rosh Hashanah specifically in terms of Cheshbon Nefesh. And the third approach is very, very fascinating. Iran writes that the minhag in Barcelona, in Spain, was that they would start Slichas on Chaf Hey Evel, 5 days before. What's special about it? That's the yichus of Chaf Hey Evel. So Iran writes, "Chol kizu blaz Yeshua, whether petition Yivra Olam b'nisin Yivra Olam, we appear to assume in our davening a petition Yivra Olam. Depends on how you interpret Hayom Haras Olam. On the assumption that petition Yivra Olam, as I mentioned before, petition Yivra Olam." Provides the commemorative aspect of Rosh Hashanah, because it means that Rosh Hashanah is which day? Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaShishi. Because Rosh Hashanah is the day of Rias Adam, and the day of Adam's Chet, and the day of Adam's Din, and the day of the original Din was in Rosh Hashanah, the original Yom HaDin. So then, second, what was the first day of Rias Adam? First day of Rias Olam, the day that this process began, is Chaf Hey Evel, 5 days before. Right? If Aleph Tishrei is Vav, then Chaf Hey Evel is Aleph. So you have 5 days in advance, so we're building up. And then the Vilna Gaon points out, so we, our minig, the Mishnah Ashkenazim, is instead of being tied to the date, Chaf Hey Evel, we're tied to the day of the week, which come back to your questions, if you're taking this third approach, so then you understand well why the day of the week plays in so, is highlighted so much, because after all, that's the presentation Chumash is not by date, presentation Chumash by day of the week. That we understand that well. So either it'll be a couple days before, date-wise, or it'll be a day, like this year, it was a day after. Chafe was Shabbos. We started Sunday, so it was the Sunday close to, a Sunday close to Chaf Hey Evel that captured the essence of that Chaf Hey Evel. So I just wanted to talk about a little bit about Sunday Shabbos. I think what this captures also, what this approach captures, is the value of process. Because Adam was created, Rosh Hashanah creates Adam, because Baruch Hu infuses, takes a human body, an animal body, and endows it with a neshama. On Aleph Tishrei, Kadosh Baruch Hu, for the first time, created this unique fusion of the physical and the spiritual. Spiritual, almost angelic neshama fused together with seamlessly, as only Kadosh Baruch Hu can do, fusing is the paradox of a spiritual neshama with an animal body, and that's what we call the unique Bria called a human being. Kadosh Baruch Hu makes that fusion in Rosh Hashanah. But as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos points out, first Mishnah in the fifth parak, Kadosh Baruch Hu could have gotten straight down to business. Rosh Hashanah could have just willed the entire universe into existence in one fell swoop with people all ready to go. But Kadosh Baruch Hu instead decided to set the stage first. And Adam and Chava together, the last step. Even though Sof Masim Achshav Tchila, the goal, as we'll get to soon in Sil Sharim, was the goal of the creation of Al Mazeb was to give human beings the context in which to be challenged and to have opportunities to grow and earn our Olam Haba. So I couldn't, but I, so the goal was us, the purpose, the telos was us. And Rav Roshan chose to set the stage first. And the Rav Roshan adopts the process that's expressed in the Chumash as 5 days, 5.5 days, whatever, 5 days, the first and the second, the third and the fourth and fifth day of Bria, and even what's going on in the beginning of the sixth day of Bria, of land and terrestrial animals before finally the climax of the Bria of Adam. That's what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't create the world b'mamar echad. Instead, he chose to create the world b'asara mamaros, right? 10 statements, meaning 10 separate expressions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu willed the universe into existence in stages, instead of just snap, everything happens. Mishnah says, why? So the Mishnah seems to say, so I have to figure out what this means, so the Mishnah says, to give more schar to the tzaddikim who are makayim the world than was nifra be asar mamaros, and to either to express the magnitude of the onesh or to increase and cause the magnitude of the onesh of those rishayim who make decisions that corrupt the world that Kadosh Baruch Hu create v'asar v'maros. In other words, either the Mishnah is saying that Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to communicate to us how important the universe is and how important our role is. So in order to communicate that, he created the world in stages so that we would see it. Or not just to communicate that, to actually make it so. Kadosh Baruch Hu, it could be the Mishnah even saying Kadosh Baruch Hu actually made the world that much more significant by going through step by step by step by step. And that raises the magnitude, raises the stakes of our decisions. Either just to let us know how great, how important decisions are, or to actually make them more important. But that sense of process that Kadosh Baruch Hu was showing us, Kadosh Baruch Hu chose, we don't understand most of what it says in the first part of Bereishis. As Ramban points out, maybe Parsha Bereishis will talk about that some more. Different ways to begin to understand the Ramban points out. The Mishnah Chagiga says, my separation is Kabbalah. So Ramban points out that so much we don't understand. But one of the things that Chazal pointed out, even for the non-Kabbalists, you should notice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes the process of Bria as a process. That's one of the few things we can clearly understand is HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows it should be processed. Again, the Mishnah says, tells us something about the importance, the gravitas of the universe, and specifically the importance and gravitas of our decisions. So, according to the Ran of Lagon, that's what this week is supposed to drive home. Number one, to realize, to take yourself seriously. This is the time, these are the days that Kadosh Baruch Hu chose, so to speak, to back it up and to take it step by step, to at least convey and perhaps create that greater importance through process. Presumably also, I imagine, it's also to for us to realize not only that Kadosh Baruch Hu's process, creative process, Kadosh Baruch Hu's investment in creative process tells us something about, you should realize you matter. You matter more than you think. A little mitzvah you're going to do, who cares, who knows, who cares, what does it really matter? It matters a lot more than you. You're being the kind of world, the world that Kadosh Baruch Hu invested in for you. And the second level, perhaps also, is to realize the acknowledgement from a Kadosh Baruch Hu process, you also awakened to notice the importance of process in our lives. Or far what the Slichus is driving at from the Ram perspective. But to realize that things take time. And you get to good things slowly. A very insightful non-Jewish writer by the name of Stephen Covey. In Seven Habits, he has the following excellent mashmah. He says, you know, school teaches you a lot of important things, but sometimes it trains you in bad habits. Imagine that you're a farmer. Take a question, couples. Imagine you're a farmer. You can keep your hand up or you can rest it wherever you prefer. Imagine that you're a farmer. And by the way, as you listen to this sketch, think about where in Tanakh this problem, this farming problem, was encountered. The famous narrative in Tanakh. So imagine you're a farmer. And you didn't, you should have, let's say, there are strong seasons. And you should have planted in the fall, then it would rain over the course of winter. And then late winter and early spring, things begin to grow and sprout. And eventually in the springtime, you can harvest things. You didn't plant in the fall. In Tanakh, the scenario is the owners of the field weren't there in the fall. They couldn't plant. Or, the way Stephen Covey describes it, imagine that you just sort of, you know, you're too busy, you're too distracted, you're too whatever to actually get down to business and, you know, work consistently. So instead, you wake up, you know, a day before the paper is due. I mean, you wake up a day before the wheat is supposed to grow. He goes, come out! Tomorrow's harvesting day. I didn't even plant yet. Oh, boy. So you're like, all right, wake up 2 weeks before. I should have planted 6 months ago. So you're like cramming in all the plants. You're like pounding, deploying all nighters, seeding the field, watering the all the water that should have fallen. It actually did fall, but your seeds weren't there yet over the course of the winter. So you're like cramming all the water. You've been like a week with a hose. It's all day, all night, just watering your seeds nonstop. Do you think it's going to grow? No. Right, the deadline, in Eretz Yisrael, you'll have to start harvesting the grain on Chol Moed Pesach. Right, so mamash, like, forget about it, clean for Pesach. I gotta like finish all my seed and water. Mamash, like, down to the wire. Eretz Pesach morning, the guy's still watering his field, like flooding his field with a season's worth of water. Is anything gonna grow? Obviously not. Right, by the way, as an aside, we're in Tanakh. The Talmud did this. Is there a pair of people who face that problem? And it was too late to plant their field. You may never have realized, but that's why these people are so poor, even though they're dirt poor, even though they earn a lot of, they own a lot of dirt. They own a nice plot of land, and yet they're starving. And the hint is, they own a nice plot of land in Eretz Yehuda, and yet they need to go, they're aniyim, who need to survive all of Matnas Aniyim, because they have land, but they weren't around planting season. So the land is worthless until next year. A very famous story in Tanakh. Another hint? The two people who have that land, I guess maybe legally they don't both own it, the two people are shy to a piece of land, but are impoverished and are being supported over Matnas Aniyim. There aren't that many stories in Tanakh where someone's collecting Matnas Aniyim. They're both women.
The Rus?
Oh. Thank you. That's what you're going to say? Yes, right. Rus and Naomi, they come back. That's the significance of that one. They come back in the springtime. There's a nice piece of land, but it's absolutely worthless. I mean, they're not doing construction, it's farming land. But what does farmland help you if you show up? You come back to your land during harvest season. Garnish. Why? Because you can't cram natural systems. School is an artificial system. So it does teach you a lot of important things, hopefully, but it does train you in some bad habits. One of them is, in school, in the short term at least, you can often get away with cramming. That's not a great habit, especially not for living real life, like farming or like relationships with people. That's Kofi's Ha'ara. You can't cram a relationship. Like if there's someone in your life that you were ignoring for 6 months, you can't like all of a sudden like, you know, shower them with attention and friendship or faux friendship for like 2 days and now we're all good. That's not the way it works. Like, real things require process. Real things take time to grow, to be cultivated, to be nurtured. Over time, a relationship grows. It's true relationship with people, real relationship with people. It's true in terms of, certainly in terms of substantive relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. And in terms of growth in one's own Hashem, it takes time. If it's too rapid, then it's almost invariably too shallow. And when plants are rooted too shallowly, they don't last very long, as the Mishnah Perek Yavis points out. Real substantive, sturdy growth requires time and patience and step by step building and growing and deepening and rooting. And over time, with patience and with consistency, it grows into. Because step by step means patient, you have small steps at a time, but you keep making those small steps. You keep moving forward. And every week and every month, a little bit more ambition, and another vista, and you keep going again and again and again. Over time, you think of a mountain climber, if you try to, there are speed climbers. But most speed climbers actually speed down rather than up. You need to go step by step, but you need to keep going. Another step, and eventually you can scale great heights. So that is l'chaora, the other aspect of, again, we have three approaches to what's pshat in the minig of 4+ days of slichas before Rosh Hashanah. Seems like it's nishtahin nishtahar, right? Not necessarily shmei tshuva. That's not all l'chaora she'el. So what is it? Right? So again, one mahalach is it's a tashlumin. It's Tosefes Aseres Meshuva. Another approach was connected, like they made Bikur of a carbon tunnel. This third approach of the Ran of the Lagon, that it's the days of Bria, the first 5 days of Bria. Again, Ribon Shalom's process, and appreciating what that tells us in terms of our importance and our gravitas and the significance of the decision that we make. And number two, in terms of, for almost like Valachta the Dracha, to appreciate the importance of process in our own lives. And when you want to do Rosh Hashanah Kippur right, it's not about cram and crash. It's a step by step towards it. And that can also lead to a step by step. If you want Rosh Hashanah of Tavshin Ayin Tes, if you want to be able to come to Rosh Hashanah of Tavshin Ayin Tes in a different place than you're coming to Rosh Hashanah of Tavshin Ayin Ches, which is the ultimate goal of Rosh Hashanah, is not an ends in of itself, but to set yourself up, put yourself on a track of growth. And that one of the main lessons is to come in with the week of sleep, is to come in with a message of process. Yeah, he's been waiting very patiently.
How did sleep correspond to the Korban Tamid?
The first approach is looking at sleep primarily as a intensification of tefillah. The second approach, I think, is looking at slicha, as a prod to greater focus on tshuva and cheshbon nefesh, which correspond the same way one's mevaker a carbon to see if the sheep has any mumen that prevents it from being offered to Rebbeinu Shlomo with Nei Hashem. So we want to check ourselves, see what spiritual mumen do we have that can get in the way of our presenting ourselves to Rebbeinu Shlomo. Yeah. Yossi, I am grateful to you for clarifying something important. In other words, let's make this brass tacks l'maisa. What slicha should wake you up to realize is, at the very least, like, don't wait until Musaf, you're standing by Musaf of Yom Kippur, you're like, oh, like Taka, I should start thinking about theirs, and then I start thinking about theirs and tikkunim. Right, start now. Carve out, I think we talked about this the other week also, let's carve out time. See if you can find 10, 15, 20 minutes a day. It would be amazing. First, just start with, find 10, 15 minutes. Once. Sometime before Rosh Hashanah. To actually sit down with a piece of paper and a pen, or just with your head, and just think of, like, what are some of the two or three of the things that I'm proud of, what I've been up to over the last year, last month, whatever it is. And what are two or three things that, I'll be honest with myself, I'm not talking to anyone but myself and the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Not so proud. Okay, and then to think, okay, blameless autopsy. What can I do about it? To give yourself feedback. What can I do about it? So, what's the plan? I wish this was different. Charata. Another question. Okay, where's the Ziva Sachet? So, let me think about, like, what are the triggers. I know, like, if I'm in a particular situation or a particular person presses my buttons, whatever it is, like to spend some time thinking about it. Here are the two or three things I'm not so proud of. What are the triggers? And how could I either respond to plan, equip myself to respond to those triggers differently, or reorganize my day, my routine, so those triggers won't come up as often, or so there'll be other people around when I hit those triggers, whatever it is. Or something that can remind me, something I can learn, something I can think about that can give me the strength when those triggers come up, or whether it be a machaneh or a malakam to overcome. But yeah, but that's if you could do that every day from now to Rosh Hashanah, now to Yom Kippur, 2 weeks from now to Yom Kippur, basically, that'd be amazing. It would be a Yom Kippur unlike one you've ever had before. I am confident. Your mamash plan, prepare 5 minutes a day from now to Yom Kippur of Cheshbon Nefesh. Then, one or two things that proud of, that you're not proud of, planning, and then the next day you pick up. You keep, if you a piece of paper, you pick up, the next day. Think some more. I had 24 hours to let it percolate. Okay, maybe that is a good idea. It's not a good day. No, that's a problem. Not such a big problem. You know something else, it is more of a problem. Oh, maybe this has been dreamer, this means that means that. To do that over time, that's powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. Someone else had a hand? No.
Regarding the second interpretation, why
would
we ever say 6 to 24 days before?
Yeah, so I'm not sure. Or the first approach also. Why it's tied to Sunday is much more geschmack if you take the third approach. I'm not sure whether it has more to do. I think both can give different have different formulations. Whether it just it's a clearer, easier milsa psika. Everyone knows you start after Shabbos. It is maybe even just to keep everyone across the board. Everyone knows when you're supposed to show up for slichos. Yeah, or other approaches, but it doesn't seem like it's so fundamental according to the first two approaches. According to the third approach, you really like the Gaon is saying it's mamish. That's another way of figuring out what the proper date is Sunday. Yeah. Now, that's sort of the background of Sichas. Maybe tomorrow we'll talk. We've been talking about this for a while. And tomorrow, we'll spend more time tomorrow than today. We'll end our Ani Yoni Rosh Hashanah. I promised last week a couple different riddles that you would have to resolve. Right? Shofar and those other four mitzvahs. Or what was it? Shofar versus Lulav and Halal and Kriyas HaTorah. There's one other mitzvah that actually is in the same camp as Shofar. And that's Birkas Kohanim. So we'll talk about that riddle tomorrow. I think I promised also we would talk about Malchus, Yochanan, and Shofros. Where are those categories? Like, why haven't we seen those categories the rest of the year? These are such fundamental categories. And number three was, what's with the apple and the honey? Specifically, it's a beautiful minig, but it seems like it ought to be in a Siddharaisa. So, presumably, not. We try not to do Isur and Raisa any day of the year. Certainly not at the first meal of the year. So those are three riddles we will pick up with Hashem tomorrow, as well as, but we'll begin with sort of just the practicalities of Slichas. This is sort of the background, the conceptual background, what we've been talking about up until now. So we're going to tomorrow open up with the Lamaisa of Slichas. Well, the more, how it's structured, the more important parts, what are the more critical parts, and so on and so forth.